we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off in Kampala, where Uganda defeated Eritrea Thursday 3-0 to lift the CECAFA Cup football trophy. On a bright, mostly sunny day in Kampala, Bright Anukani delighted the Ugandan fans with a goal in the 31st minute. Mustafa Kiza and Joel Madondo sealed the victory with goals in the 68th and 89th minutes, respectively. The Council for East and Central Africa Football Associations organizes this regional tournament, and it's regarded as the oldest football competition in Africa, dating back to 1926, when it was known as the Gossage Cup. Host Uganda finished the tournament unbeaten as it posted 6 consecutive victories. I'm sure the performance of the Ugandan Cranes delighted not just the fans in Kampala, but also their head coach, Jonathan McKinstry.
Sporty greetings. This is Jonathan McKinstry, the head coach of the Uganda men's national team. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
The Basketball Africa League's inaugural season is set to tip off in March 2020, and things are on course for the 12-team league. According to a top official of the International Basketball Governing Body, FIBA, in Africa, in an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, the president of FIBA Africa Zone 3, Colonel Sam Amadou, retired, said no teams from his zone qualified for the new league.
Unfortunately, none of the FIBA Zone 3 teams qualified. As a matter of fact, what has happened is that the teams from the other zones that played in Yaounde were able to beef up their teams with high-quality American players, while the teams from our zone played with virtually players from our own, from their countries. We were all the same. It was a worthwhile competition in Yaounde, and I strongly believe that the teams that qualified from Yaounde will do very well at the ball.
Are there more qualifying tournaments before the Basketball Africa League commences in March 2020?
Yes, there is the qualifying tournament for the Southern and Eastern African Zone going on right now in Kigali, in Rwanda. 6 teams are also playing there.
Can we comfortably say that Africa is on course to the eventual commencement of the Basketball Africa League in 2020?
Definitely. Africa is on course. And because the first qualifying tournament of the conferences have been played in Yaounde, the second one is going on in Kigali, in Rwanda right now. And there was an event that was held in New York on the 3rd and 4th of December. That is the combined, where clubs were invited to come and look at prospective players and select those that can beef up their team for ball. It was a successful event, and there were high-quality players that we had available, which some of the teams have picked players from. So everything has been done for ball. Ball will take place, and I can assure you that.
From the FIBA Africa Zone 3 point of view or perspective, what's your take on the Basketball Africa League?
It's a welcome competition. Is good for the development of basketball. It's good for the development of our national federations. And overall, the standard of the game will improve, as well as the entertainment, the value of the game. It will attract more fans to the game of basketball across the zone and all across Africa.
That's Colonel Sam Amadou, retired, the president of FIBA Africa Zone 3. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from the southern U.S. city of Atlanta, Georgia. Colonel Sam mentioned the recent Basketball Africa League Combine in New York and how it was a successful event. VOA's Adam Phillips visited the Scouting Combine. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to Adam's feature report.
Cold winter sunshine poured onto the gleaming wood courts at the Brooklyn Nets training center as 50 hand-picked African players hailing from 20 countries trained together and competed together in five-on-five scrums under the guidance of NBA coaches. Each player had already played at the highest levels in American colleges and universities, or internationally, or in NBA second-string G Leagues. It was also a big day for NBA Africa Basketball League president Amadou Gallo Fall, who organized the combine with a dual purpose: to fill out the 12 teams that will start the BAL inaugural season in March, and to entice NBA scouts looking to bolster their American teams.
We want to attract elite global talent, create a very compelling basketball product. Essentially, this is a recruiting initiative for our teams to come and evaluate talent and hopefully sign them to their roster.
During a brief, sweaty break between scrums, Nigeria-born UC Eregbu of Sacramento, California, said he dreams of an NBA career.
Yeah, that's always a dream. For any basketball player across the world, you want to be in the NBA, that's a goal. So this is a stepping stone to that.
Now, are these rivals or friends out there?
A lot of these guys are friends I've met along the years, traveling and stuff like that. But on the court, you had no friends. If you're not wearing the same jersey I'm wearing on the court, I don't know you. And I gotta go at you like I never met you before.
Nearby, Olelekan Ajayi, also Nigeria-born, sips some Gatorade and evaluates the competition. A three-time Student Athlete of the Year at Eastern Michigan University, where he was also class valedictorian, Ajayi has played in Spain, Mexico, Tunisia, and Angola. What are you here for, like, in the heart? Like, what does this day mean to you?
This is a great opportunity to get an invite from the NBA for this combine. And I understand that nothing comes easy. You know, nobody gives you anything in America or anywhere in the world. You know, you have to work hard and gain what you want. So that's why I've been successful so far.
I think some people, you know, would think, well, if I come to this combine, I don't get into the NBA, like, I'm toast. But it doesn't sound like that's the only thing. That's not the be-all and the end-all for you.
No, because not everybody's going to be picked. You know, I've done my job. And I let God take control. It's none of my control. What is my control is take care of business on the court, and I've done that. And then if this don't work out, I always have step one, step two, step three. You know? But I know this is going to happen because this is what I do.
High ball, high ball. But Ghana-born John Magnoplange, who directs the Basketball Africa League strategy and operations team for the NBA, reminded us that the BAL will be about elite club competition in its own right.
For me, just having this first combine sends a message to the basketball world that Africa, right, is a destination for top-level talent. So currently, if I'm a high-level basketball talent, of course I would want to play in the NBA, I want to try out for the G League, I may want to play in Europe. Africa is not even on my radar. And that's what the BAL is meant to do, is to say to these young men that if you're good, Africa should be a location and a destination for your talent. Gives you a chance to go back to the continent.
Indeed, for some contenders here, simply being chosen for the BAL would make them true winners. Obai Aget of South Sudan received his invitation to the combine only a week before it started.
I was excited because this is a big opportunity for me to play back home. I played here for 4 years in college, and my family didn't watch one game because it's difficult for them to actually get here. But now, if I can make this league, I can go back home and play back home, and they can be able to come watch me. And that's a dream for me.
What's another dream you have?
I actually want to see this league in like 5 years to be all over the world, because there's a lot of kids in Africa that love basketball and look up to the NBA players.
Were you one of those kids yourself?
I was actually influenced by Lualdeng Munudwo from South Sudan.
The scouts at the NBA Combine were understandably mum with the media about who they want for their teams, either in the Basketball Africa League or its parent organization, the National Basketball League. However, one thing is sure. Come March, sports lovers in Africa and beyond will have some serious new action to watch on the court. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Adam Phillips reporting from New York.
This is Dikembe Mutombo. I am from Africa. Malaria kills thousands of children every day. Don't let your child be one of them. Make sure they sleep under a treated mosquito net. Beating malaria is like winning at basketball. You need to get to the net.
You need to get to the net. Thank you, Dikembe Mutombo, for that public service announcement. And thanks to my VOA colleague, Adam Phillips, for that spicy Basketball Africa League feature. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
The Voice of America, VOA.
My VOA colleague Jim Stevenson joins us now with a package of golf and auto racing news. And Jim says he'll be teeing off with the United States lifting the trophy at the President's Cup Team Golf Tournament in Australia.
The U.S. President's golf team came from behind to win the 13th edition of the biennial contest with an international team of players not from Europe. And it was a special 16-14 victory in Australia for one of the game's best players ever, Tiger Woods, who mastered two of the biggest roles.
As the captain and the player, it was a juggling act, but the guys understood that, and we knew that, and we communicated that going in. There were a lot of different plans that could happen, and I trusted all of them, from all the 11 players with Strix and Cups and Zach as our vices. It was trust in each other, and that's what ultimately won us the cup.
Woods was the only golfer of the 24 who played to win all of his matches. The first 3 days were led by the international team, and South African captain Ernie Els was able to lead his side to a pre-match target of 10 points by the end of play Saturday. But that left the U.S. team only 2 points behind, going into head-to-head singles match play where anything could happen. Matt Kuchar clinched the winning margin of victory when he was assured of a half point in his match against Louis Oosthuizen.
I've played enough match play, played enough golf, that if you keep plugging along, I knew some good things was happening, and we're playing good enough. And to have a chance there on 17, knowing exactly what that scenario was, if I make that birdie there, that gives me a one-up lead and the, for sure clinching half point. And to make that putt, to have everybody there on 17, I don't know that I can explain the emotions, but I was leaping out of my skin with joy. To do that was such a thrill and something I'm hugely proud of.
Barely 2 years on the PGA Tour, Xander Schauffele has won 5 tournaments and come very close to winning in 3 major tournaments. He was thrilled to play at Royal Melbourne and with Woods as captain.
For me, personally, a dream to play on this team since I was a kid. I think I'm speaking for more than just myself. At no point did we feel, we were obviously down, but not in spirit. T-Dub, you know, we had our meetings every night. He just pulled us through, and he just told us to keep our heads down and keep fighting.
U.S. Open champion Gary Woodland was also appreciative of his opportunity to play.
This has been a goal of mine for a long time. I grew up playing team sports, and being in an individual sport, I just haven't had that. And I've been close for a lot of teams, but finally making this team, it's been an amazing month since I got the call from captain. We've all been invested. He's unbelievably invested. But this week was amazing. You know, it was stressful today. I played great today and got steamrolled. I didn't want to lose the only, you know, my first team event. So it was nice that the guys stuck together and played great golf and pulled it out.
Tony Finau didn't win any of his matches, but he still contributed 3 critical half points, including a tough final battle with Japanese veteran Hideki Matsuyama.
I was 4 down today, and I thought to myself, I didn't have a lot of my best stuff, and I thought Hideki played a great round of golf. I was 4 down with 8 to go, and I basically told myself, you know, if I can't give up on all my teammates, on my guys, on my captain, Tiger, you know, the story of his resilience coming back from what he has with injuries and everything that he's been through. I think, you know, each of us, we just believe in each other because, you know we could do what we did today. And we really believe that we can win the cup. You know, we were kind of against the odds, but, you know, I couldn't give up on my teammates and my captains. And I know that's everybody, you know, everybody on this team felt the same way.
Justin Thomas was paired with Tiger Woods in an early doubles match and was impressed with Woods' dual role.
In terms of a captain, he did great because, actually, I was talking to Zach about it, because someone who's done as much as he has and had as much experiences as he had in all these team events, he very easily, I felt, could have tried to take over the team rooms or try to give all this advice and try to do so much when he was like, look, including himself, we have 12 of the best players in the world. And no offense, but he just needed to get out of the way, and that's what he did. Once the captains made the teams, he was just like, go play hard, boys. Even when we got down, he's like, look, they're making more putts than we are. We're going to be fine. Never panicked.
Woods was named U.S. President's Cup team captain while recovering from his fourth back surgery. His amazing comeback on the golf course, which included his fifth Masters title, gave him the rare chance to enjoy a hard-fought team victory.
I've been a part of teams before where we have won. Also been a part of, unfortunately, this President's Cup when we lost 21 years ago. And so to, you know, come here and to do it in this fashion, to do it with this team in particular, it was an honor for me as a player, and it's even more of an honor to be their captain.
Formula One car racing will debut next year in Vietnam as the fast-growing host country tries to attract high-end tourism as its own wealthier citizens are taking a growing interest in sports. Between 2010 and 2018, the number of foreign tourists in Vietnam expanded from 5 million to more than 15 million. Rajiv Biswas, Asia-Pacific chief economist at market research firm IHS Market, says hosting Formula One races is expected to add even more tourism.
It's probably one of the strategies of the government to increase value-added tourism and also to brand the tourism economy in a better way. And then, of course, Vietnam's own more upper-middle-class population would be interested in these kind of events.
A Formula One racing circuit is due for completion next month in the capital, Hanoi, with the country's first Formula One Grand Prix to be held in April. The Vietnam Grand Prix circuit will extend 5.6 kilometers, 1.5 kilometers of which will be straight. It will allow speeds of up to 335 kilometers per hour. The governments of host countries pay to host the races and build the racing infrastructure. Mark Thomas, executive consultant with Omnicom Experiential Group, a marketing firm with expertise in sports, says Vietnam today is much like China 15 years ago, an up-and-coming nation that wants to showcase itself to the world.
I sort of think it works for both sides. The government gets what they want, which is a global sort of advertising platform for what they are and what they want to become. And Formula One and their owners get a nice check.
Around Asia, Formula One holds other races in China, Japan, and Singapore. Thomas says China breaks even on its Shanghai circuit by renting it out between races. Malaysia stopped hosting Formula One in 2018 after losing money over 17 years. Soccer and basketball have already gained followings in Vietnam. Frederick Burke, partner with the law firm Baker McKenzie in Ho Chi Minh City, says the rapidly expanding economy gives people the ability to buy event tickets and goods sold by event sponsors.
Generally speaking, sports economy is really starting to take root in Vietnam. People in Vietnam love certain sports, especially soccer, and now they're starting to like basketball. Vietnamese people now have some leisure time, and entertainment is really lacking, and people like to go to these games. They do really well.
Phuong Hong, a Ho Chi Minh City travel sector business person, says auto racing is expected to grab the most attention among expatriates and white-collar Vietnamese men, especially those who already like cars.
The upper class of Vietnam who care about car, about auto, surely they will like this.
Phuong herself hopes to make it to Hanoi for a Grand Prix event.
Thanks, Jim. That's my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson. And I encourage our VOA listeners to check out Jim's weekly Game Room podcast via voanews.com. A brutal one-handed form of boxing in Nigeria known as Dambe is gaining popularity, even though it has left some fighters with multiple injuries and in some cases led to their deaths. Timothy Obiezu reports from Nasarawa, Nigeria.
Crowds are gathering at this field near Abuja, known in the Hausa language as Gidan Dambe, or boxing house, to watch a big fight. It's being held to honor a boxer who spent years promoting Dambe, a native and brutal form of boxing where one fist is used to strike an opponent and the other one as a shield. Tournament officials crowned boxer Maman Bashir as boxing king.
Honestly speaking, he's my son. I introduce him to the business and I point him myself that will be a good ambassador with time. And now he fulfills his promise by trying his best to make sure that cultural promotion, especially Dambe, is being promoted in the whole country.
No one knows when traditional boxing started in Nigeria, but it has been in existence for more than 100 years. Unlike in standard boxing, local fighters don't wear protective gear to shield the face and body, raising serious concerns. 2 years ago, a young boxer claimed about a score of his friends died from their injuries from Dambe boxing. Nakede Bako's brother, popularly known as Mijaji, suffered injuries to his head and leg during a fight and died in July 2018.
I was hurt by his death, especially because he left his wife and children behind. I will never get to see him again.
But officials of Nigeria local boxing league say boxers are aware of the dangers involved and are appropriately compensated in cases of casualties.
The risks in traditional boxing is the boxers are aware that there is a punch they will give you and you can die. So definitely they have taken it into their mind that they want to do it.
Last Wednesday, another boxer died here in this venue. But despite these concerns, fighters are recruited to join every week.
For me, there's no quitting Dambe. I will continue to fight until the day that God takes
me. Officials of the Nigerian local boxing league say they are now introducing medical teams during a match to care for any injuries that may arise. Last week, Nigeria's sports ministry said plans are underway to adopt Dambe as a national sport. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Nasarawa.
Thanks, Timothy. European champion Liverpool of England will play South American champion Flamengo of Brazil in Saturday's final at the FIFA Club World Cup football tournament in Qatar. The Brazilian Roberto Firmino scored a 90th-minute winner Wednesday when Liverpool beat Mexico's Monterrey 2-1 in a semifinal match in Doha. Firmino flicked in Trent Alexander-Arnold's cross at the near post to lift the Reds to the late victory. And this sunny side of sports programming note, my VOA colleague Gwen Uten will have a preview of the FIFA Club World Cup final during Friday's show. And that wraps up the December 19th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Patrick Dea. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of your breakfast show, Daybreak Africa. As always, our newsroom is on top of the news of your interest. We provide you with up-to-the-minute news about Africa as well as world news. Tune in to our show right here on VOA Africa, your trusted source of news and information.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
This is Science in a Minute.
University of Copenhagen researchers have extracted a complete human genome from 5,700-year-old chewing gum. They say it's the first time an entire ancient human genome has been extracted from anything other than human bones. The chewing gum, which is actually pitch or tar extracted from a birch tree, was found during archaeological excavations in southern Denmark. The scientists say they were also able to extract DNA from oral microorganisms and key human pathogens. After analyzing the genome, the scientists found that the ancient gum chewer was a female and was more closely related genetically to people from mainland Europe than those who lived in Scandinavia at the time. The genome also revealed that she probably had dark skin, dark hair, and blue eyes. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Nana Akunedo Ajeman Rawlings, the former First Lady of Ghana, reflects on the importance of empowering others and using public office to serve Ghanaian citizens. Nana Akunedo Ajeman Rawlings on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.